lane, 15-10, touchdown, Chargers!
What's up, guys? We are back with a brand new episode of Chargers Weekly. 3 weeks until the 2024 NFL Draft, but business at Hoke Performance Center this week, April 2nd, baby. As always, joined by Matt Money Smith. And Money, you were there for the start of the offseason program. You got to listen to the pressers. We have a ton of questions that we will get to and weave throughout our episode today. But just want to give you the floor again first on just your reaction to the start of a new era of Chargers football, man.
I'm not going to name names. It'd be a lot of people that perhaps the folks listening aren't familiar with, but you know, people that we work with that are part of the Chargers staff, and just feel it, man. You can feel the juice. You can feel the bounce. You can feel the electricity. You can feel the excitement. People that are in the building every single day, it is infectious. It is palpable. And I think the sliver, the whatever it might have come out to, an hour and change of pressers from those three individuals, I think, you know, sort of speaks and gives you a tiny glimpse into what life is like every day and how committed, you know, this staff is and these new men are, you know, these men are to building a championship caliber football. And it permeates, man. I could feel it in talking to all the people that we've been around for the last, you know, 8 years, and how it's taken over that facility and a new culture is being installed.
So Jim Harbaugh, you can listen to him talk for hours. Hayden Hurst was great, but you know, the main event was Ben Herbert. And I don't know if I've seen somebody in his position get the floor like that in an NFL press conference. It was remarkable, and I think it leads to the first question that we have from our buddies at Charger Chat Podcast. Dude, that Ben Herbert press conference was intense. I've never heard a strength and conditioning philosophy like that. What kind of impact do you think he will have on our players and team? It's better for me and you to just let Ben give that answer.
First goal is to make you harder to break. People often may say, training, we're going to break you down and build you up. My goal is not to break you. My goal is to make you harder to break. How are we going to go about doing that? How we train your neck in traps to protect your head. Right? The most vulnerable areas of the body, in my opinion, in the game of football, the head, right and left shoulder, right and left hip girdle, right and left hamstring, right and left ankle. So through your training, you have to be proactive at training those areas of the body. So the neck work that I introduced today, the trap work, the four-part cuff sequence to address the four rotator cuff muscles in their shoulder girdle, introduced them to some hip work, introduced them to some ankle work, right? These are things that are paramount. If you want to make a football player harder to break, your training has to be sound. In my opinion, it's all my opinion, your training has to be sound in those areas. So that's goal number one, make you harder to break. Goal number two, and it has to do more with here than, like I say to the guys here, consistency. Your ability to show up every day and repeatedly do what you are capable of doing. Consistency is incredibly valuable. Attention to detail, right? There's a way we do things, there's a way we train, and there's a way we like when we had 2.5-pound plates we used today. And when they put those plates back, the plates are stacked and they're about 2.5-pound plates high. When they put them back, they put them back a certain way. It says rogue at the top of the plate. Every rogue is perfectly square. Doesn't matter if it's the second plate or the 10th plate. It goes back precisely. No different than a DB's eyes or his footwork or an offensive lineman's feet or his hand placement. Like ways we practice attention to detail. We train a certain way, but we also, how we keep the room. Just how we do everything, there's a certain level of detail involved in that. And then emotional stability. You will never see me. Some guys, coach is one of them. Chris Hinton's a guy that's, you know, we were together at Michigan. These guys, they've been around me a couple months. I don't change. Meaning, oh, Coach Herb got the juice today. He's feeling good. He's happy, he's excited. Well, then it rains, and I feel a certain type of way. Or, like I told the guys, I have a wife, two boys, two dogs. I have a car with four tires. If I get a flat tire, I'm not going to take it out on you. If something happens, I don't change emotionally. When I walk in the facility, who you know me to be is who I am every day. It's never changed. This is my 23rd year. No one, people that knew me 1998 or 2002 would say, yeah, today I'm that same person. Emotional stability, incredibly important. And then bigger, faster, stronger. I want to improve range of motion in tissue and joint. I want to give you more pressing capability. I want to make you improve your acceleration, your top end speed. All of these things, we call them key performance indicators that have to do with flexibility, mobility, strength and power, agility and speed. And when you think of those three things, help make a guy harder to break, consistency, attention to detail, emotional stability, bigger, faster, stronger, more mobile and flexible. That's what you can, that's how you can describe our program.
Money, so much there. My favorite part was the attention to detail part, talking about the rope plates and putting them perfectly. And it reminds me of a book that I read, Legacy, about the All Blacks, the rugby team, sweeping the sheds.
Yeah.
You know, just the little attention to detail and how he correlated it to a DB's eyes and what you do on the football field. I just found it remarkable.
Yeah, you know, I think a lot of it, you know, in many of those books, your leadership books, you know, Captain Class, the Boys in the Boat, like all of those, look, there's a reason why it's included, you know, because it works. It works. And, you know, I think it's not comfortable if you're, you know, busting your tail and you're throwing iron around for an hour and you get a guy breathing down your neck because you put a plate a quarter of an inch, you know, off the mark where he wants it. You know, that can create some uncomfortable situations. And the point there is don't care, you know, because your eyes drift. And as he described it, you know, you move 3 inches the wrong way and it's over. You know, you're supposed to have inside leverage. And, oh, I missed it by just an inch, though. Yeah, it plays over. And that's, you know, it is a microcosm of what they're creating. And that is attention to detail, that every inch matters, that every step matters, that every glance and where you're looking, where your eyes go matter. There's a reason why we played the entire 4 minutes, because you can listen to it over and over again. And there's a reason why the Chargers made him available, because they know his messaging. They know how on point he is, how precise he is, how good of a communicator he is. And I don't think that can be, you know, I don't think that can be overstated, that he communicates well, that he explains the why, you know, when, you know, he's talking about 2.5 plates. If, you know, I had to go through shoulder rehab, so I know what that feels like. It is not fun, man. 2.5-pound plates when I had to rehab my AC joint that I separated, you know, 300%. That's what I was working with. I was working with 1 pound and 2 pounds. And your shoulder is out, and you're doing your arm circles, and you're holding it over your head, and you're doing front. And, man, I can guarantee you those 2.5-pound plates did some work on Monday at the facility. And so I think it just breeds – It breeds that culture of there's a method here. There is a method that's going to carry us past a finish line and win a race, not just participate. This is how we win the race. We're all participants. Do you want to win? You know, do you want to participate, or do you want to win? Because we're trying to train you to win. And I think that's what a lot of that. And look, I'll just finish with this. You know, the main part of his 30 minutes that he talked with us was all about, you know what, making you harder to break. You can't win the race if you can't finish it. So I think that's where it all starts. Let's make sure we finish the race, and let's make sure we're running it to win. And that's sort of, you know, what I felt the philosophy that shared, you know, the philosophy that he shared. That's kind of how it hit me.
Yeah, I loved how he kicked it off too. He says, I'm not trying to break you. I'm trying to make you harder to break. And that's one of the things Hayden Hurst talked about. Hayden Hurst played for John Harbaugh. And this is a very similar operation. They want to beat you up, and they want to be the last team standing in the fourth quarter. And Hayden talked about that philosophy.
I mean, I think everybody in this league, they're big, strong, fast, athletic. But when you have a system like this where you get guys to buy in and collectively fight for one another, and you turn it into a street fight, which is like what we did in Baltimore, you know, just you're going to out-tough people, because not everybody wants to do that for 60 minutes. You know, it's a tough game. It's tough doing that 20 weeks for 60 minutes. And I think these coaches with, you know, playing for John and playing for Jim, they expect to wear teams out at the end. And if you're not going to do it, they're going to find somebody to do it.
So, buddy, these are the types of players that Jim Harbaugh wants to bring in. People that are familiar with what they're trying to accomplish to get everybody on the same page. And these are the things. April 2nd, from here on out, these are the moments that are going to prepare this team to be that last team standing in the fourth quarter. Because as Hayden Hurst said, there's a lot of teams that don't want to play that way, that don't want to play 60 minutes, that don't want to tough it out with 10 minutes left in the fourth quarter. And this team is training right now to be one of those toughest teams in the NFL.
It was my favorite 30 seconds of the day. It really was. Because it's one thing, you know, coaches have messaging, they have talking points, they have philosophies, but if the players don't buy in, it doesn't matter, right? So to hear a player say the words, if you're not willing to do it, they'll find somebody else. That to me is what, you know, was the most impactful sentence of the entire day. It's not a coach saying it. It's a player saying, hey, I lived it. I know what this looks like. And you know, this week I do the radio show with Petros. Petros was a short yardage back. You know, you can think about what that is in a Division I, you know, football, in Division I football for a team like USC and what you're asked to do and how you're asked to play the game. And I talk, you know, and Lorenzo and I do the Believe stuff every week. And they both had the exact same response. Number one, they loved it. They ate it up. It's their brand of football. It's a brand that they believe works. And I think each of them shared something very insightful, coming from players that were asked to play this way. And, you know, it was, you know, Lowe was talking about blocking for LaDainian and going to the sideline and saying to, you know, whomever was there at the time coordinating the D, hey, he's turning it down, man. He goes, it's late in the fourth quarter and I'm going to the side saying, this is what we're running. When we get back on the field, I can tell you right now, have him follow me. He's done. He's done. He's tapped out. Let's go. And that's how we would win games. And that's how we would close it out, because I could feel it. I could feel our team breaking the will, you know, and Petros explained it this way. And I don't think people, you know, and I've heard it said before, you know, there's two goals, really. It boils down to two goals in the sport of football. Forward progress, preventing forward progress. That's all it is. The side that has the ball is attempting to progress forwardly. The team that is not possessing the ball is attempting to prevent you from progressing forward. It's that simple. How you choose to do that is up to you, but that's what it boils down to. And you ask any O-lineman, you ask any tight end, you ask any fullback, you want me going forward? You want me going backward? What would you prefer to do?
Yeah.
They all want to go forward. And they all want to go forward and get to a point where they break your will. And that's what was conveyed in that quick statement there. You might be able to do it for the first quarter and you can stop it. It's not a complex power is not a complex play. You know, duo's not that complex. You know, running between the gas, not that complex. You can stop it. But can you stop it when it's minute 56 and it's a tie game? And that's what Hayden Hurst spoke to. The other thing I'll add with it real quick, Chris, you know what I loved about that answer too? And he didn't break stride. He said it. Are they willing to do it for 20 games? Not 17, divisional round, championship round, Super Bowl. 17 plus 3. Are they willing to do it for 20? Are they willing to play 60 minutes of street fight, beat the living snot out of each other football for 20 games? He said, and there's very few teams willing to do it.
Yeah, I think it's very important for Chargers fans to understand that talent is only one slice of the pie when you talk about a championship team. Talent has left the organization in the form of Keenan Allen and Mike Williams and some other players, but talent's one slice of it. Scheme and coaching is another part of it. And we'll get into Jesse Minter and some of his philosophy and the things he likes to do and how they disguise things, but will is probably the biggest part of it. Are you willing to do something that other teams are not willing to do?
Yeah.
And that's where this offseason program sets the foundation for that for Chargers fans. So one last clip, Money. This is Jim Harbaugh talking about building his players up.
You know, what you're striving for is the player that, you know, plays within the scheme, really knows the his job schematically and can make the adjustments, make the calls, you know, combined with a superior athlete. You know, I mean, if somebody doesn't know what they're doing and they're a superior athlete, they're probably going to get beat by the one who really knows what they're doing and is a really good athlete. Really learning what we're doing schematically and what each person's job is and how it fits with all 11, plus making your, you know, going from good athlete to better athlete to great athlete to superior athlete. I mean, we're trying to make that combination. Because you can train yourself to be, you know, better, stronger, more agile, more flexible, more lean, muscle mass, less fat. You know, fat's the enemy of speed. So we've had a lot of similar ideas about football. And bottom line, just trying to get better at football, trying to get really good at football.
He always has a fantastic one-liner or three or four one-liners to come out of a presser. Fat is the enemy of speed was my favorite. And this is a question from Kev that kind of rolls right into Coach Harbaugh. Is it crazy for me to think that under Jim Harbaugh, the Chargers will never finish below 10 wins in any one season? I don't know the answer to that, Kev, but I know what's being built right now in his track record of success. It wouldn't surprise me in the least if this Chargers team was a 10-win season in 2024.
Look, the Chiefs are the best team in football, right? It's impossible to argue that. They've won 3 Super Bowls in 4 years. But are they the most consistent? And by that, I mean, yes, they have made the postseason the AFC Championship game, for that matter, every single season since Patrick Mahomes has been there. That's consistent. But I am talking about a Baltimore Ravens team that over the course of 20-plus years has always been in contention for or has won their division and has punched their ticket to the postseason. And I know I've said it before, and I don't want to say it, you know, because I know everybody that listens, I don't want to keep repeating myself, but that is all you're looking for. That is what you are seeking, a chance to participate in the postseason. Because once you get in, now you just need to execute. And sometimes it goes your way and sometimes it doesn't. But just think about the Bills and how close they were before that special teams error and that special teams touchdown. You know, think about the Ravens. They gave that game away with dumbass penalties and dumbass plays by Zay Flowers at the goal line and Lamar Jackson throwing into just a ridiculous interception in the end zone. But they were able to compete. And that's what I believe at the core of all of this is a brand of football that allows you to be in every game and gives you an opportunity to win in the final 5 to 10 minutes, which is how most of these games are decided, and gives you an opportunity to chase 10 wins, which is what you need to get into the postseason. How do we play football to get an opportunity to win or hang on, you know, to snatch a win from defeat or to hold off defeat in the final 5 minutes? And how do we develop something that can win 10 games? Because that's how we get into the postseason and then let the chips fall where they may.
This is not an expansion team, but it's a completely different culture. There's so much to be excited about. A new GM, a new head coach, a new staff, new players. And we have so many questions, buddy. I know that we're not going to get to all of them today. We're going to have to kind of punt them to next week, but we'll try to get through as many as possible. A lot of draft questions. We'll start with Doug Beckham. Despite a theoretical Vikings trade back earning, quote, positive trade value, 5 for 11 and 23 and a future third, would it be regretful to pass on pairing Herbert with a big time blue chip receiver, with this possibly being the only chance to do that through the draft? It's a great question. I'm gonna start each of these draft questions with whatever Joe Hortiz thinks is best and whatever Jim Harbaugh thinks is best. Who are we to argue with a guy who's been in that Baltimore Ravens organization for, you know, 2+ decades and a guy who has won at every level? But I will say that, I use Daniel Jeremiah as gospel when it comes to projecting these players and his top 50. And he has Marvin Harrison as his second player. He has Roma Dunze as his third player. He has Malik Nabers as his fourth player. So if there is not a trade partner for the Chargers at 5, and you can get a Marvin Harrison, a Malik Nabers or a Roma Dunze there at five and pair him with Justin Herbert on a rookie contract, I think that that's not going to be something anybody's upset about money.
So here's, I just came to this through the course of the week, and I was talking to some people, and it just kind of came up in our conversation, and I'm sure I'm not the first person to bring it up, because it hit me like a diamond bullet right between the eyes. They're going to trade back, because and here's why. Because they want more picks, right? They want more picks to populate this roster with players that sound and believe in what they do like Hayden Hurst believes in what they do. That could be Marvin Harrison. That could be Roma Dunze. But let's just say, and this is all predicated on this not being smoke and it really being four quarterbacks, that yeah. Really there are teams chasing four quarterbacks, that Jaden Daniels is not going to slide, Drake May's not going to slide, and J.J. McCarthy's not going to slide. We already know Caleb Williams is going number one. That is fait accompli. So if that's the case, if you are Arizona, you hold currently picks 5 and 27, why would you not trade, knowing that the Chargers want to trade back? Why would you not trade 4 for 11 and 23? And before you consummate that deal, you call Joe Ortiz. Mossy Austinfor calls Joe Ortiz and says, hey, I'm going to trade you 11 and 27. All right. I'm going to get 11 and 23 for number 4 from the Vikings. I want Marvin Harrison Jr. And all I'm doing is moving up 4 spots from 27 to 23. I'm giving you our second first rounder. I'm giving you 11. I'm coming back to 5, and I'm taking Marvin Harrison, and you're going to get your 2 first rounders that you were passed over for because we did the deal with the Vikings. So you're still getting 2. You're just picking 4 slots later. It makes too much sense. It makes way too much sense for the Cardinals to do that, knowing that it feels like the Chargers want more picks, and for them, and they may say,
we got to clip this. Hey, we got to clip this if this happens.
And if I were Joe Ortiz, I would think about saying, you know what? How about this? How about you keep 27? You can have 5 and 23 and 27. I want your second and your third. Give me 11, your 2, and your 3. And now they can maybe get out with, you know, 11 and 34, or it would be 36, 37, and 2. And they now they have a 1, 2 2s, 2 3s, 2 4s. How about that? How about that to get things started for this team? It just, to me, it lines up. It's too obvious that it works out that way. And at 11, you can take maybe the number one corner. You can take one of your offensive linemen that are likely graded very closely to one another, be it Alt and Fuaga and Fatanu and Latham, whomever that may be, Fashanu, whoever that may be. Or you can take Quinyon Mitchell, the number one corner. You can take one of the DNs. You can take Brock Bowers. Maybe Odunze slides. Like, to me, it's so obvious. It is so obvious to me that that's how this thing should play out.
There's a clip circulating this week. I'm sure it's been around for a while, but it was Mati Asafort last year on the phones. Did you see that? It's a 3-minute clip, Money, where he is doing the trade with Houston. He's on the phone with Detroit, and it's theater. Yeah. It's 3.5 minutes, and this is kind of an amazing insight into the war room and maybe what the Chargers are going to be doing on draft night minutes before they select. And you know, Mati likes the deal. Yeah,
you're right, Chris. It's exactly what he did last year. It's the exact same thing. They wanted Paris Johnson, and they were like, whatever. They still got their guy. They added a first. They would do the exact same thing this year. I haven't seen it yet, but I'm glad you brought it up, because that's exactly the scenario that I am painting. And it just makes – right? Am I crazy? It makes way too much sense.
It does, especially if you want to build your team. Now, I will, because we have so many Marvin Harrison Jr. questions.
Okay.
People, listen, I get it. You are enamored with Marvin Harrison Jr. or Malik Nabers. How realistic would it be for the Chargers to take Malik Nabers if Marvin Harrison Jr. is still on the board at 5? Well, you just laid out the reason for trading out. I went back and listened to I read an article. This is after Ohio State and Michigan played. And Minter did a masterful job on kind of limiting Marvin Harrison Jr. He still got his. But Jesse Minter, this was a quote from Jesse Minter about Marvin Harrison Jr. He's probably one of the best college receivers in the last 15 to 20 years. One of the best NFL draft prospects at that position in a long time. So that's Jesse Minter saying that.
Right.
Jim Harbaugh, he's a great player. Got to be covered. You got to slow him down is probably the better word. So I agree with you. I think that they need to build this roster out and get as many guys as possible. If you don't have a trade partner, though, I just wonder if the connection to Marvin Harrison Jr. through that game and playing in the Big Ten is enough to be like, you know what? We know this guy's work ethic. He was unbelievably impossible to guard. If he's on our team with Justin Herbert, wow. But what if Joe Ortiz likes Malik Nabers or Rome Odunze better? You know, I just think that there's a lot of questions that we don't know inside that war room about what number five is. But going back to your last point, I can see them trying to trade out and really building this roster out at a myriad of positions, maybe in favor of one of those top three guys.
So, look, I always feel like I have to explain myself because people get so upset at the idea of them not taking one of these three.
Yeah.
So I'll lay it out like this. You know, I have scar tissue. I have Jim Harbaugh scar tissue because I lived it. Like I lived it when I called college football games, and it's one of the greatest things I've ever seen. I'm not going to lie. I mean, I'm calling the game nationally. I'm a neutral. I'm calling the game neutral, and it never bled through. I'm not going to lie. It never bled through on the broadcast, but I can tell you right now in my heart and in my football soul what I wanted. And I wanted Stanford to win every game because it was fascinating to me to watch. I had called all these Pac-12 games with all this finesse on the field and wide receivers and spread it out and air it out. And Jim Harbaugh showed up at Stanford and simply said, we're going to bust your ass up. We are going to come in here, and it's a pain in the ass to recruit, and I can't get the athletes that you have, so you're going to get all your five-star wide receivers and your fancy play on the edges running backs, and I am going to get the best O-linemen, and I'm going to get guys that want to fight, and we are going to beat the living hell out of you, and you're going to quit. And I watch, and it happened on, and Lorenzo didn't mean to say it, but he said it. And it just hit me. He's like, you know, and he didn't mean to make a point as he said it. He said, oh, I love hearing this, you know, because the NFL has become such a finesse league. And I was just like, I'm reliving this. Like, I'm reliving it right now. I can remember talking to Coach on the field with Curtis Conway, who was doing the games with me, and him just talking about, it's a finesse league, man. It's a finesse conference. No one's built to slow us down. They're all playing with five defensive backs out there. These linebackers are 220 pounds. And he would go out credit card alignment with six O-linemen, two tight ends, a back, a fullback, and a quarterback. And he would run it down their throats and he would punish them. And I think Jim Harbaugh has looked at the NFL and has said, they're not ready for it, man. They can't handle it. They don't have the personnel. They got 215-pound safeties playing linebacker right now. They will not be able to contend with what we are going to put them through for 60 minutes. So for me, it's hard to envision how a wide receiver fits in to that vision as a priority. It's me. It's total bias. I acknowledge it. It's because I lived it and I watched that Stanford team as a 49-point underdog upset USC. And I watched them bend the Trojans and end their reign because of their physical prowess and their will. And I can't help but think he's trying to redo it.
He very well could be. I'll ask you this though, because Justin Herbert is a different animal. Justin Herbert and his arm. And I think it's very realistic to think that if you get rid of Keenan Allen and Mike Williams and you look at a generational wide receiver, which Jesse Minter said, 15, 20 years, haven't seen a guy like him. And, right. And you could pair him on a rookie contract with Justin Herbert while still trying to build that team. I think that that's probably the one thing that I look at where I agree 100% with you, but I think Justin Herbert is the outlier here. It's like, okay, we've never had a quarterback like him who could stretch the field too. Like, you could play a number of different ways, and we have to pack a running game. We have to be aggressive and physical. But if you give Justin Herbert, Marvin Harrison for the next decade, and we're still able to accomplish all of that later in the draft and throughout free agency over the next couple of years, that's the only area that kind of gives me pause and says that says, man, maybe at five, it does make sense to get a Harrison or a Neighbors because of the quarterback. And we can still build all of that. But just knowing that you're taking one of the best players in the draft, like the number two or three or four best player in the draft at five, that's where I'm a little conflicted. I see both sides.
Yeah. Yeah. So here, I'll play the side. Listen, everybody's going to love you on this pod, Chris. They're all going to hate me, and it's fine.
It's not the intention. I will play
the other side of this. So here's the way I'd push back on that. Would you rather take Marvin Harrison at five and then get a tackle that probably doesn't have 34-inch arms, might have to be kicked inside, or maybe has a, you know, is a little bit of a waist bender and we got to work on his technique? Or would you rather get the elite prospect? And in the second round, I'm going to give you Xavier Leggett. I'm going to give you 6'3", 225 pounds. Guy looks like Deebo Samuel out there. Looks like Brandon Ayuk out there. Like, that's the thing, is the wide receivers, they have proven. It has been proven year after year after year, as recent as last year. You know, as recent as last year with Rashee Rice and Tank Dell and Puka Nacua, you can find them. There are very, very few offensive linemen, corners, defensive line that you're going to find. There are some, but very few. You know what I mean? There are, every single year we have this conversation about wide receivers. DK Metcalf, second. AJ Brown, second round. You know, it's Cooper Kupp, third round. Like, the best receivers, you know, some of the best receivers are found. Brandon Ayuk, late first round. You know, Nuke Hopkins, late first round. Justin Jefferson, 23rd pick. Like, it's just, there is such a wealth of history that says you can find, because, like, that's what football's become, right? Football, if you have little kids, if you're listening, and you're growing up in the Friday Night Lights era, you're not growing up in the Pop Warner era. It is flag football, which is great. It is wide receivers. There are no running backs in Friday Night Lights. There are no linemen in Friday Night Lights for the most part. Everybody's just running out. So we are pumping out wide receivers. There are so many of them. You know, with the spread of the spread offense, and how, you know, it used to be, you know, Hal Mumme and just a handful of these schools that ran the spread. Well, now everybody's spread out and throwing it all over the yard. There are so many wide receivers that are coming in, and there are so few offensive linemen that are at, I remember, can't remember who the, shoot, I wish I could remember who it was. The Rams took him number two overall out of Baylor, the tackle. And I remember they took him, I said,
St. Louis? When they were in St. Louis, right?
Yeah, when they were in St. Louis. But I remember when they drafted him, I said, Baylor, these linemen have to hold their blocks for a second, maybe a second and a half. Why would you try? I don't care how athletic he is. The guy hasn't had to hold a block for more than a beat. You know, you have no idea what he's going to be. So that's why when you talk about the likes of Fuaga and Joe Alt and Latham, these pro-style offenses where these dudes were busting tail the whole game, I think that has so much value. And there is this, there is, you know, like if we go back to Quentin Johnston, and I'll wrap with this, I know I'm going on too much here. You know, if you look back to Quentin Johnston, like, there's no defensive backs in the Big 12. You know, there's none. They don't put corners in the league. They spread it out. They throw it real quick. That ball is out and you're gone. Like, there's very little precision in route running. And it's just, it's such a different game. It's such a different sport. So I think the idea of identifying offensive linemen that play in this style, it's a much easier bit of guesswork. And I think that's why you see first rounders be so successful at that position group. And there be this wide variance in the wide receiver group, because it's such a different sport from college to the NFL. But blocking, pro style blocking, is what it is. And it's easier to kind of get a gauge on, okay, this guy's good, this guy we got to work on. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that if you don't take a receiver at five, it will require a trade out to get the tackle. I don't know if you take a tackle at five, because I don't know if there's a consensus right tackle that's you could identify that early. But, you know, we talked about all the trading up for quarterbacks. It wouldn't shock me in the least if somebody wanted to trade up for Marvin Harrison Jr. That Cardinal scenario that you laid out, I could see that happening. I could see a lot of teams with a quarterback. Now, The Texans just got Stephon Diggs. Like, Buffalo, it'd be a little too risky for Buffalo to move up that high because they pick a 28. They don't really have they don't have enough ammunition to get up there. But there are teams that I could see wanting a Marvin Harrison Jr. or Malik Nabers at 5-2.
That's why the Cardinals thing makes so much sense.
Yeah.
Because they lose nothing. They lose nothing in the deal. What they do is they gain four spots in the first round. It's like, hey, we got arguably the best player in the draft, according to a lot of the people that rate players, and we went from 27 to 23 to do it. Pretty good deal for us.
Like, that's why there's so much, I think, buzz among Charger fans and maybe some disagreement, because both scenarios make sense, right? Like, if it was just one slam dunk scenario, everybody would be like, yeah, just take Marvin Harrison. It's fine. But I think you realize that there's a lot of holes on this team. And if you want to build the team the right way, it requires a lot of draft picks and getting guys early in this system on rookie deals. So that's why I think that there's so much excitement about what they're going to do at 5, because there's no like cookie cutter answer as to what you do.
Right. If you run the ball well, and the way Hayden Hurst explained it when asked, like, well, how does this play into having Justin Herbert as your quarterback? And he was just almost insulted by the question. He's like, how does it play? It's like, when you're running a ball down somebody's throat, they got to commit resources. And the second they have to do that, we now got one-on-ones. These are NFL receivers you're talking about. They're going to win their one-on-ones. And you got Justin Herbert throwing the ball. And now the defense is a disaster. Their brains are twisted into a pretzel. Do we commit to slow down the run because they're busting us up running the ball for 6 yards a carry? Or do we now have to send safety help because Josh Palmer, whatever receiver is out there, is winning his one-on-ones like he always does? Like, that's the thing, you know, is it? We've talked about it. He made AJ Guyton and T. Billy. He made them household names for Charger fans.
Yeah,
because they were one on ones, you know, and guys were and other teams had to commit to Hunter Henry, and Keenan Allen and Mike Williams, and then he just attacked the one on ones. So that's how you work. And again, I go for people. I'm not trying to question, the scouting validity of our folk, of the people listening that are asking the questions. But just before you get too enamored with Harrison, Odunze, or Nabers, do yourself a favor and go watch some Keon Coleman. I like Xavier Leggett. To me, man, that dude is a man. He is tossing SEC dudes all
He's
over
awesome.
The place. Like, go watch Roman Wilson. Watch how he snatches the ball in stride. He never gathers. He never breaks speed. You know, go watch some of the projected. Watch Addy Mitchell out of Texas. Watch Xavier Worthy in that 4.2 speed, in press, shaking some press and getting down the sideline. And think about that.
How about
that.
Some Ladd McConkey? I like that Ladd McConkey.
Ladd McConkey. I mean, he's just a jitterbug. Guys everywhere. Changes direction on a dime. Like, so that's kind of what I'm saying. Before you get too locked in, just this is a really deep group. And just envision, I could see that. I could see that Keon Coleman working out. I could see that Roman Wilson working out. Like, there are other players. One of these receivers from the second round is going to have a borderline Pro Bowl season. I promise you. I promise you it's going to happen. They're going to get drafted into the right circumstance, and they're going to put up 1,000 yards and 6 touchdowns. It's going to happen because it does every year.
Guys like Roman Wilson, Franklin out of Oregon. I mean, there's a lot of different wide receivers there, man. I'm gonna hit you with a trio of Jesse Minter questions. Okay. But first, Double M. This kind of fits in nicely. I know he's being sarcastic here because, Chris, with so many draft experts on X that know how to fix the Chargers at pick number 5, why are none of them currently employed in the league? That's he's just playing to what's been happening over the last few weeks among Charger fans. And you know what? That's why I say let Joe Ortiz and Jim Harbaugh do their thing, right? Like,
look,
they know what they're doing.
If he's speaking, look, I'll say this. I know we're having a little fun, but if he's speaking to the people in the media, they're good at what they do. They're really good at what they do. You know, our friends Dane and Jordan and obviously DJ and all the – they commit – a ton of time, and they watch a ton of film, and yes, it's their opinion, but I value their opinions. I respect their opinions. They know a heck of a lot more about it than I do. As I said, I am coming from a different place.
I think he's referring to everybody who's on X.
Exactly. And what I would say to them is what I just said, go watch everyone.
Yeah.
Go watch Joe Alt, stone guys, play after play. Go watch Fuaga wreck a defensive end and then find a linebacker and send him into the third row and then find a safety and send him back to his mom. Like that guy sets a tone. And I go watch the quick and soft and fluid feet of Graham Barton. Like, go watch Brock Bowers. Brock Bowers wins games for Georgia. Goes out there and wins games as a tight end in the SEC. Like, this is not a three-person draft. It's not, you know, it's not a one-person draft. It's, you can get excited about so many of those different players that do so many. Go watch Quinyon Mitchell, man. Watch that dude. Like, there's a lot of things you can watch beyond just Marvin Harrison, 8 minutes of highlights.
No doubt. All right, let's go ride or die Chargers. What are the non-negotiable needs that have to be addressed on Minter's defense to succeed? I'm going to rip off a couple more. John Boykin, I am concerned about the middle of the defense, front to back, but especially D-line and middle linebacker. Personnel changes will continue, but is there anything about Minter's scheme that should make me feel better? And then finally, what positions – this is from Stephen Gillard – what positions do you believe are most important for Minter to operate his defense? How does the current roster sit at said positions? So there's a lot there, and I'll start with the fact that he has Thule, Khalil, and Joey. Now, if you go back to Michigan when they had Ajabo and Aiden Hutchinson and how they got after the quarterback with pressures, they didn't have the caliber of defensive ends the following year, but they were able to get a lot of pressure with their defensive tackle. So what that shows me is that Jesse Minter is adaptable. He can be versatile, and he will play to the strengths of the defense. He wants attacking, intelligent players. The middle linebacker position, obviously Denzel Perryman's in the mix. I'm very fascinated to see what they do with Henley money. And then building up that defensive line, we'll see what he's able to do with the guys who are currently on the roster. I listened to some of the – he had like a coach tape or some sort of session on YouTube where he talked about the differences in the college game versus the pro game. So right off the bat, he knows that the NFL is a different animal. It's a different beast. And every personnel on offense is different in the NFL. He says that in college – it was more about the volume of plays. Like, hey, we can throw away a play. If we get 2 yards, whatever, we'll run another play. We'll run a high volume of plays. Whereas the NFL, every play matters. And you're trying to be perfect on every single play. So I think that Jesse Minter are keenly aware of the differences in the college game versus the pro game. And it just seems like even looking at Mike McDonald's defense money in Baltimore, just how they're able to disguise things and make things maybe easier on the players, but make it look more confusing to the offense. That's where the talent, scheme, and will kind of come into play. I think Jesse Minter's scheme is really going to maximize some of these players' strengths on the Chargers defense.
Yeah, you know, Chris, I don't think it's by coincidence that Joey and Khalil are back and Mike and Keenan aren't. I think, you know, you need to have that pass. You know, as he talked about, you mentioned, you know, it wasn't Aiden Hutchinson. It wasn't Quinnipay. It wasn't David Ajabo that was there last year. You know, those DNs are not first round picks. So he had to do a lot of that disguising, 5 guys, 6 guys. They don't know where the pressure is coming from. It wasn't just stunts. It was that, you know, you got 3 guys flooding one side. And so, and on the other side, you're just filling spots, you know, from your linebackers, from your safeties, your nickels, you know? So I think the one thing that he needs is smart players. You know, you need players that are comfortable, you know, learning a defense that has some rules. And play calls that have some rules, and your eyes are going to have to tell you what your assignment is. You're going to have to feel things out a little bit. You know, is that back going to leak out into the flat, or is he going to stay in and pass protect? Is what's that tight end doing that's attached? Is he going to leak? You know, like there's because this guy's vacating and he's going to be wide open for 20 yards down the seam unless I know that that's what I see and that's now where I have to go play. It's not. I don't think it's nearly as complex as what Brandon Staley was doing, where every single play had like 5 different answers to it. And players said they just got so in their own heads, it was hard for them to execute. It's not like that. Yeah. I think he's still calling the play and this is the play we're going to execute because this is what we think is going to happen. But so I think you need smart players. I definitely think they need corners. I think you need some corners. I have faith in Aloe and Derwin as the two safeties. I think maybe, you know, if JT Woods, it'd be nice to see this strength coach, maybe get him built up a little bit, you know, get get him built up and see if you can get, you know, that production back that we saw at Baylor, where you had, what, 6 interceptions in a season to lead the NCAA. So, certainly he's got the eyes. Just got to get him built up a little bit. So linebacker's obvious, I feel like, just because we know about the injuries to Denzel Perriman. So and the good news is off-ball linebackers, you can – look, there's one I got. If they can do that deal with the Cardinals, and I'll roll the dice. And I know it may seem crazy to roll the dice because he's got 2 knees, an ankle, and 2 shoulders. But, man, Peyton Wilson looks an awful lot like Luke Kuechly. And he is as athletic. He is as smart. He's a tackling machine. You just see some of the reads that he has, all the TFLs. I think he had like 18 TFLs last year. Like, yeah. he's gonna be there in the second round. So if you can do that sort of deal that we talked about, where you say, "Nah, you guys keep 27. We'll take one of your 2s and one of your 3s, since you already got 2 of each," and now you're talking about picking up that kind of linebacker. That to me is, I think that's probably the level. And also they need some beef in the middle. I love Tito, love Scott Matlock, but I think if you can maybe find some meat in that middle. Their pass rush packages are going to be incredible. When you're able to put Joey Bosa, Tooley, Morgan Fox, and Khalil Mack as your front four, it's going to be incredible.
That's where Minter's going to make his money, no doubt.
Yeah.
Hey, speaking of corners, a couple corner questions. Before we get to them, though, I joined the Chargers Chat podcast last week. He asked me a great question about what Michigan player would you want, you know, in like, let's say, like the second or third round. And I said Sanders Still. The nickel corner. But then I was like, oh man, well, what about Chris Jenkins? And I said, oh man, well, what about Junior Colson? You know, like there's 3 players on each level of that Michigan defense that I think would be just absolutely incredible for the Chargers. So let's get into this question real quick. What corner are we drafting and what round money? And then, hey, Chris, love the show with you. A money question. The current cornerback room is average to say the least. Who are some free agent corners that Chargers should bring in? I don't feel optimistic if this is the room come September. So I guess corner from both a draft and
so
and free
I just want to make sure I pull them all up. So I talked about Quinyon Mitchell and Terrion Arnold. Those seem like the top 2. I think, you know, Nate Wiggins, he's got the speed and he's got the length. He's not very big. He's not very meaty. And to me, like, I think they need corners that can tackle, you know, and that are physical. And I think that's kind of where the Terrion Arnold, Quinyon Mitchell come in, where if you trade, you know, and if you do trade back, that I think that's going to be a very real conversation. I know you want the O-line and you want to build that physicality up front, but we need corners and we can get the best in this draft here at 11. He's still sitting here, whether it's Mitchell, Wiggins. I just think Wiggins is too small. You know, I'm looking at the measurements now. He's listed 6'1", 173. I just don't – like, to me, I look at Mitchell, you know, 6'195". Terrion, 6'190". Like, I think that's more of what, you know, Cooper DeJean, 6'203". Like, to me, those are the style, of course. So, if they – let's say they get that late for – now how are you feeling? Do you want Marvin Harrison at 5, or would you rather take the best right tackle in J.C. Latham – to pair, you know, a massive human being to pair with Rashawn Slater, and then you get Cooper DeJean at 27, and now you've got a starting corner that's big, that's physical, you know, that fits the style that they want to play. Like, to me, you know, there's Rakestraw, there's Lassiter that are at the top of that second round maybe, but the one thing about corners you got to be careful of is there's going to be a run on them, because there always is, you know. Like, you kind of get that top one out of the way, and then all of a sudden it's like corner, 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 because they're premium positions. And typically teams at the back end are really good teams, and they know you need corners. Like the Vikings, right, under Zim. Every year they drafted a corner in the first or second round because they're like, yeah, this is what we need. This is the league we play in. So Max Melton, I'm just looking at some right now. You know, you mentioned Sandra Still. There's Max Melton out of Rutgers. Is another good one that could be a second. Lassiter has kind of been mocked in that second round range. So they're out there for sure. But I think the one thing I would point out, it's going to have to be a physical corner that can tackle. And just think back to the playoff game in Jacksonville, right? Here comes Travis Etienne. Can you make the tackle and win the game, or are you going to get run over? Here comes Josh Jacobs. Week 18, Las Vegas. Can you make the tackle, or are you going to get run over? It's not just cover skills. It's not just length. It's not just speed. Can you make the tackle? So that's why.
I'm so glad you mentioned both those games because it's exactly what we're talking about on April 2nd.
Yeah.
Fourth quarter, week 18 with a chance to go to the playoffs. Are you going to win the matchup or not?
Right.
You're in Jacksonville with a chance to go to Kansas City for a divisional round playoff game against an opponent that you have had success against at Arrowhead, at least. It comes down to one play. And can you make the play? And those are the types of players that they're trying to identify. I love the idea of if you trade back, get a corner at 11, and then at 27, take best available player. So somebody asked if Brian Thomas, let's say Brian Thomas from LSU was there at 27. It may be too late for him at 27, maybe too early at 11, but you never know. You know, that 27 would be really the wild card there as far as take just best player for your team.
Yeah, and like that's why I mentioned Legat. You know, like that's, to me, that's the guy that kind of fits the profile, you know, the big physical, he's going to block you up something good when you're running, and he's going to bust you up if you try to tackle him too high. You better get him low because he's going to run over you. Like that's where that comes in. But yeah, the Ravens drafted a ton of first round receivers. You know, they just drafted Zay Flowers, Rashad Perriman, Rashad Bateman. Like there's a massive Hollywood Brown. Like they draft, it's not like they don't draft receivers in the first round. They do. So it could totally happen. I think it's just a matter of what, remember they were doing that when their fronts were set. You know, they already had their fronts. Their fronts were great, you know, because they're so good at filling those positions. And it's like, yeah, now let's fill in.
Victor, with all the focus on Minnesota moving up, do you guys think the Chargers would be willing to allow the Broncos or Raiders to move up if the trade compensation was massive, or is it Minnesota or bust at five? Very, very good question, Victor. I don't know, but the way that Coach Harbaugh speaks about J.J. McCarthy leads me to believe that he wouldn't want J.J. McCarthy in the AFC West. So I guess it would depend on trade compensation money, but I'm not sure Jim is willing to give Antonio Pierce or Sean Payton J.J. McCarthy and have to face him twice a year based on the rave reviews that he's given him over the last couple of months.
No doubt. Now, for me personally, yeah, I got no problem. You know, I feel like I got the best quarterback in the league. I'm good. I got Justin Herbert. And if you're going to give me next year's one and a one and a two from this year, and you want to jump up, and I feel like at 12 or 13, I'm going to get a really good player. And this is, you know, Tom Telesco used to say all the time, right, when we would talk to him about the draft, guys, remember, this is not about, you know, I'll just say it for this year. This isn't about 2024. This is about 24, 25, 26, 27, 28. That's what we're talking about here. So to be, to some degree, short-sighted, I think it's like, no. I am now going to get an extra one in 2025. I'm going to get an extra two in 2020. Those are players that I can now put into my system for the next 5 years. I'm doing a 3-for-1 here. Now, you know, the cautionary tale is don't ever forget who traded that draft pick to the Chiefs that they used to select Patrick Mahomes. It's the Buffalo Bills. Yeah. And it has tortured them since they decided to make that move. So, you know, I guess there's your cautionary tale.
All right. This is from, I think it's Hanan Derry. Apologies if I got that wrong. In a stick and pick scenario, all right, he's giving us no choice now. He had a stick and pick. 5, 37, 69, 104, 110. Give me your off-the-top mock draft money. If you have to stick, I know we're going really deep here, but let's just do 5, 37, and 69. Let's do the first three.
Well, I think if you stick at 5, you know, what would I do? I'm a best player available guy. So, yes, if I'm stuck at 5, I'm taking the wide receiver. If I feel like
there's
a bit of a gap.
Which one are you taking?
Well, if it's 5, I'm assuming all the quarterbacks are gone because you're not trading out. So all the quarterbacks are gone. No one wants to give you what you want for Marvin Harrison. So we're taking Marvin Harrison at 5. That's, to me, the obvious answer. I just feel like his grade is probably going to be higher than anybody else. Any tackle, any corner, you know, Harrison's going to have a not considerably, but a large enough, you know, margin between him and the next player that's who we're taking.
I'm almost more intrigued about 37, actually, like, because the beginning, like that Friday is fascinating because there's going to be guys that you thought were first rounders that are going to go off the board right away. And the Chargers pick at the top of that second round, 37.
Yeah. I mean, if I'm taking wide receiver in the first, geez, I guess, what am I doing? Let me just kind of, I don't know if there's an old lineman that I would like there. I'm looking now. I mean, because I would prefer, so let's say this, like, well, you know what? Because I believe so much in this coaching staff, if he were there, I would take Kingsley Sumataia out of BYU. He, go back and go and watch some of him. That is a massive human being that does some serious damage to defenders. So let's say, I think he could probably be there. I think he very well, I don't think Graham Barton will be there. In talking to some people, I feel like I can get the center a little bit later. I can get the center in the third or the fourth round. So let's do that. So let's do Suamataia in the second, Harrison in the first. And you know what? In the third, I'm just going to say, what's my number in the third?
69.
What pick do we have? I think I can get Peyton Wilson. I think I can get Peyton Wilson in the third. I think I can. And I, like I said, I'm going to roll the dice. I'm going to roll the dice on the medicals. It's not good, but at least the last 2 years he's been for the most part healthy. So I'm going to go Peyton Wilson in the third and cross my fingers that he stays healthy and that enough people were scared off by the medicals. And I'm going to get at least 7-8 years of high level, you know, maybe not quite Luke Kuechly-esque, but some incredible linebacker play. So yeah.
All right. I'm going to give you a variation of this question. If you had to take a Michigan man at 37 or 69, which one would you take?
I have to take him at each one, or I get to pick which one I'm going to take.
Pick which one.
I'm going to take it later. I'm going to take it at 69. And, you know, I think Sanders still has probably moved himself into the second round. So I don't think he's going to be there, but I can probably get Junior Colson at 69. I think I can.
Yeah.
I think I could probably swing that. Sanders still is really smart. So I would consider that. That might be, you know what? That may be the way I'd go.
Yeah. Baldy had a Blake Corum breakdown, and he said if Blake Corum is there at 69, this is the type of run he's going to have. These are the types of runs, these counter runs. And it kind of got me fired up. I know that running back compared to some of the other positions that are of need on this team, those take priority over the running back. But
no doubt.
Blake Corum would be fun. But I do like, I don't know where Chris Jenkins is going to go. Like, where do you think? Second round?
I think third. No, I think the size is going to shove him down a little bit.
Yeah.
I think just, and that's the one issue, right, is we're talking about how the Chargers kind of need to get that beef, you know, in the middle. And so I think that's where I don't quite know if they're comfortable with that, you know, especially that high. Look, he's an incredible player, but I think, you know, I think there's, I'm looking at the backs now because it's just hard. I'm old. I forget these things, but you know, I think about what Jordan Reed said to us about Braylon Allen. There's, you know, Marshawn Lloyd, who's kind of more of your catch out of the backfield sort of back and can really get people to, but he's also a load, you know? So I think there's a lot of bet, you know, we know they met with Ray Davis out at the combine. So I think there's backs that they're going to be able to find. They got 2/4. I would be floored if one of them is not used on a running back. To me, that seems like the sweet spot round of where they're going to maybe go shopping.
Yeah. All right. Let's do a couple more here and we can punt some of these to next week because, a lot of good ones, man. Let's say we draft a tackle in the first round. What happens to Pipkins? Well, Trey still has a year left on his deal, right? 1 year?
Does he have 1 year? Yeah, this year and next, I believe.
First of all, before we go to Trey, did you see Zion walk into the building?
Whew. Look at that, man. He doesn't look Jim Nagy like no baby fat on there anymore, man.
Yeah, Jim Nagy said, this is before Ben Herbert gets a hold of him. Duke Mannyweather got a hold of him this spring.
Yeah, I've said it. You know, I've said it repeatedly. Like, I believe in him. I know he had a rough go last year, but you can't help but not recognize just how freaking huge that guy is. And that's just a photo. When you stand next to him, it's like, geez, it's like standing next to a building. So, you know, this coaching staff's going to get their hands on him. You know, Ben Herbert's going to get him, and I'm expecting really big things from him. I most definitely am.
Yeah. So I asked you a Trey question. Another Paul asked about Trey, too. I always thought Pipkins was a good run blocker but struggled in pass pro. With his cap hit, Would it be more realistic to focus on receiver, corner, DT, defensive tackle in the first three rounds?
Yeah, I think Trey has really struggled with run blocking. You know, remember there's quite a while when it felt like we could only run to the left side. You know, the team was only running behind Slater and Filer, and that was all that was working. So I think, you know, I think there's also the end of that contract, and you know how expensive offensive linemen are. You know, like we said, this is not just for 2024. You know, these first round selections are, you know, they're 5-year contracts at a discount. Yeah. So, you know, I think it's the idea of now look, this is, they are just getting their hands on these guys. You know, they have the film, and the film tells you one story, but maybe it is coaching. You know, there's a reason why, you know, Scarnecchia and Callahan and these guys, Adam, what's his name, who was Shanahan's guy. I feel terrible because he's arguably the greatest that's ever done it. But you got our friend Lance's dad.
Alex Gibbs.
What's Alex Gibbs? Yeah. Like, you know, there's a reason why offensive linemen thrive in certain systems, because the offensive line coaches are really good. Like there's an old saying in football that the only position you can't fire as a head coach is O-line. Like you can't, and like you can't talk to them. You can't tell them what to do, because when you have a good O-line coach, all you want to do is keep them happy. So they can say, what do you need? Just I'll stay out of your way. You're really good at O-line. It's hard to find good O-line coaches. Let's make sure you're happy and keep you here forever. So that's the thing is O-line a lot of times comes down to coaching, and you know, so they could change. They could feel like, hey man, I like what we got here. I like, you know, Zion and Jamari and Trey and Rashawn, you know, and maybe all we really need is a center, because we got to get that pairing, because we know how special it was when Herbert got Lindsley and how well they performed together. So let's just find that center, you know, and now we're good. We feel like we're good moving forward for the next 7-8 years. So that may be the case.
All right, one more, and then okay. We'll tackle more next week. Thunder Good down point. Under, our boys in Australia. Hey, they're still open to doing a pick, money. If we have any connections,
yeah, we got to figure that out.
They'd love to do a pick. A happy Easter, Chris and Money. Which NFL draft was your favorite to cover, watch, and why? I'll go first. I remember the Laramie Tunsil draft. I thought that was just a fascinating like reality show situation that was happening in real time. I also vividly remember Derwin James just falling down the draft board and looking around in the Chargers office and being like, wow, is this going to happen? Are they going to get Derwin James at 18 overall? Those are just a couple, but every draft is amazing, man. It really is one of my favorite days on the NFL calendar.
Yeah. Mine is just totally selfish. And it's, you know, heliocentric to me. Because I used to go to the drafts and we used to broadcast from the draft. So I did that for a number of years. And the one in Chicago, for whatever reason, just lined up great. Not just because, you know, that's where I grew up, but just I ended up having a really good conversation with David Shaw, who was working for the NFL Network on that one. I remember having a long conversation with Mark Dominic, who was there, and we were chatting about the draft. We had Tom Herman. And I can't remember what other coach was with us as well, but it was just one of those things where I got to kind of see a little bit of how the sausage is made and how these coaches viewed prospects, especially on day two and day three when they were sitting with us. It was really, it's very educational and informative, and it kind of got me to see the draft through a little bit of a different lens and recognize that there's 32 ways to look at each one of these prospects. And I think we often lose sight of that. You know, what is a premier player in one system may not have the same value in another. And it's always important to remember that you are looking for players that you believe will excel with your coaching, with that player's teammates, and how they fit into this big 53-man puzzle. So I think that's something that maybe people lose sight of. They just see the name and that individual, and it's like, okay, but let's drop them in. And how does this affect, you know, what was one of the things that Harbaugh dropped at us? What's good for the bee is good for the hive, you know, so it's like, that's kind of what you have to think of, you know, what's good for the hive. How does this particular bee fit into the Chargers hive? And that's how all of them, every single one of them looked at it. Oh, yeah, I see. Oh, okay, so we're putting him, and you know what? Maybe we'll kick him outside, and then we're going to put him inside. Ooh, I like the left side of that line now because yeah. That's how they all look at it. It's not just the individual. It's the individual in context of where they're going.
It's a great way to end the podcast because I think that type of insight is what you need to kind of have in the back of your mind on draft day. It's like you see the mock drafts, you see the experts on television, you see all the discourse on social media, but we truly do not know how teams view some of these prospects, and yeah. we won't know until draft day. Like everybody laughed at the Detroit Lions for selecting Jahmyr Gibbs as early as yeah. they did. He was their number one running back on their board, right? And you saw how excited they were in the war room when they selected him that early. And people were like, whoa, hold on. I thought Jahmyr Gibbs was going to be a second round pick or a late first round pick. So you don't know. You don't know why somebody is saying this prospect is perfect for my team, my culture, my locker room. And I think that's probably the most fascinating part of the draft is, you know, we are guessing, we are assuming, we are listening to what we hear in the media and what people are saying online and take that as gospel when, in fact, it's what all 32 teams think individually, and that comes out on draft day. And that's why I think just the reality show aspect of it just makes it so much fun.
Yeah, I'll finish with this, Chris. Short and sweet. The dumbest thing you can ever say when analyzing a draft pick is, oh, they could have got that guy way later. It's the dumbest thing. Don't ever say that because you have no idea what their grade was on that player and what other teams' grades might be on that player. You don't know. If you like a player and you have a grade on a player, you're going to take that player. You're not thinking about, well, you know, we could sit and maybe he'll be. That's not how it works.
No.
They grade these players. They love Jahmyr Gibbs. They loved him. And that's why they took him at 6, because they believed that he fit, again, into the hive. Did he or did he not fit perfectly? And did they or did they not go to the NFC Championship game and have a dominating lead at halftime? Like, yeah. he just fit. So who cares if they took him at 6 or 16? It fit, it worked, and they experienced success because of it. So I took him way too early. You don't know that. You don't know that. Where he would have been drafted.
And buddy, what Brad Holmes and company did in the years before that, they built their offensive line with Penei Sewell. Yeah. They built their defensive line with Aiden Hutchinson. They had the luxury of putting a Jahmyr Gibbs in and then drafting Sam Laporte at the top of the second because they had filled out their roster. I mean, when you have a history of picking in the top 10 for a number of years, you're eventually going to hit and build out your trenches, and that's what they were able to do. So. Yeah. Just one thing to think about as we get out of here. For Matt Money Smith, I'm Chris Harey. This has been fun. Money, we have a lot of questions we got to get to.
You hear the dog, by the way, barking? She's like, we're done. Let's go. Get me out of here. I got. She wants a walk or something. She just looked at me, started barking, and then jumped right in front of me. And I was like, all right, I guess it's time. I guess we're done.
What's your pup's name again?
Willow.
Willow. Time to give Willow a walk, no?
Yeah, Willow wants out of here.
All right, let's get out of here. For Buddy, I'm Chris. This has been Chargers Weekly.